Thank you very much for the introduction. Thank you for the opportunity to present this talk. I'll try to show if we can learn something from manual chamber measurements, because that's what is the basis of the work that I'm going to talk about in this presentation. Like we heard already, agriculture activities is a source of greenhouse gas emission, and therefore agriculture makes a contribution to global warming. And there is an increasing demand for food and feed production in the world, and therefore, in order to curb the contribution of agriculture to global warming, we need to try and do something to find effective mitigation strategies for agriculture. The IPCC recently put together this list of mitigation potentials for agriculture, and you can see croplands at the top here. Carbon sequestration is certainly considered to be the important way to go. Here's a breakdown of different management measures that you can do to sequester carbon. What you may note here is that the uncertainty associated with most of these measures is really high. Again, for nitrous oxide, it is really not considered to be important in the context of mitigation, except if you take land out of production. But carbon and nitrogen cycles are really closely coupled in the soil. Here's an example from a modeling study using the NDC to look at different carbon sequestration measures. There's conversion to no-till, retention of crop residues, and there's the use of organic-rich manure. And the model predicts that all of these measures will increase soil carbon stocks, which is, of course, good. But there are nitrous oxide emissions associated with this, and the model predicted that in all cases there will be a partial or a full compensation for the carbon sequestration in terms of nitrous oxide emissions. So one way or the other, I think it's important, it's necessary that we consider nitrous oxide emissions and we find effective mitigation strategies for different cropping systems. Of course, nitrous oxide emission is really variable, and that's why it's so difficult to identify this with mitigation. But if you look at site-specific conditions, maybe there is a potential to resolve some of this variability. Philippe Rochette did a study, a desk study, a couple of years ago, in which he looked at nitrous oxide emissions from no-till and tilled soil in different field studies. And he found that if you looked at soil aeration, that there was a differentiation of the effect of no-till practices. And actually, only for well-aerated soils was it possible to adopt no-till without an apparently without an increase in nitrous oxide emission. It has to be said that the variability in these ratios that he calculated was very high. It varies several-fold for each of these categories. And so there are certainly also other sources of variation that is not accounted for here. And possibly residue management, the use of fertilizer, could account for some of the variation. In this presentation, I'd like to discuss different studies on nitrous oxide emission that we have done in long-term field experiments. We have looked at different management options and tried to see how this influences nitrous oxide emission. We looked at interactions between tillage and residue management. We looked at green manure management. We also considered long-term effects of crop rotation. And based on some of these observations that I'm going to present, I'll try to discuss in the end controls of nitrous oxide emission from soil. Denmark is a small country. It's surrounded by the sea, and so we have a coastal climate in most of the country. The field experiments that I'm going to draw on in this presentation are located in two different sites, the western side at Follum and the eastern side at Flakkebjerg. Both of these are sandy loams, but they are different still because the management has been different. The eastern side has been managed without organic inputs for many years before the start of this field trial, and therefore it's quite low in organic carbon and the soil structure is quite poor. Two types of field experiments are located in both of these sites. One is mainly focused on organically managed crop rotations. These are four crop rotations where all crops are represented every year. We also have one conventional rotation in the system. The other experiment is a tillage experiment with plowing, with non-inversion tillage, and with no-till or direct drilling, as I call it here. So we did different studies addressing nitrous oxide emission in some of these. The first example that I'd like to talk about deals with nitrous oxide emission from a winter barley growing season. And we have a second study, a follow-up on to that, that I'm coming back to on a cover crop. So we had these three tillage treatments, and we had each tillage treatment we have retention or a removal of crop residues. So the straw after harvest would be removed or it would be left in the field plots. We did also some soil physical characterization of the soil. Here you see total porosity and water filled pore space. You see that the effect of residue retention at this time, after some 6 years of management, was significant in some cases, but not very high. Again, also for water-filled pore space, you see some seasonal variation, but rather small effects of residue management. Here I show the nitrous oxide emissions that we observed here. And water-filled pore space is often implicated in nitrous oxide emission, but certainly in this case, there were also other factors involved. And what Peter Grace talked about, the carbon driving nitrous oxide emission, and this is also what we see in this case, I guess. So if we first look at the gray bars, that's the plots without residue retention. Here we saw no effect of tillage on nitrous oxide emission. So the interesting observations were here actually in the autumn, where we had quite high nitrous oxide emissions, and we saw a significant difference depending on tillage practice. So that if we had plowing, the deep incorporation of the crop residues, the straw, we saw rather high emissions of nitrous oxide, significantly higher than when residues were left at the surface or incorporated near the surface. So it would appear that there is an interaction between tillage and residue management, that conversion to no-till is a nitrous oxide mitigation option on these soil types. As I said, the following year we did a study, a similar study, this time looking at a cover crop. This was fodder radish that is often used as a cover crop in Denmark. And in this case, we still had the three tillage treatments, and we only looked at plots where residues are retained. But this time we included field plots with residue retention and with or without the cover crop. In the photos you can see the development of the crop. It started to wilt in December after the first spell of frost. So these are nitrous oxide emission measurements, as I said, based on static chamber measurements in the three tillage treatments. Nothing much happened until late April when the soil was tilled, where this was practiced, and we had a manure application and we had seeding of the following crop. If you look at the open simples here, you can see that we had an effect of nitrous of manure application on nitrous oxide emission, but this was similar in the three tillage treatments. So no effect of tillage practice on emissions from the manure. But if we looked at the plots with the cover crops, where the cover crop was incorporated, you see certainly that with the deep incorporation again, the plowing, we see a lot of extra nitrous oxide being produced. So there was a positive interaction between tillage and the cover crop with respect to nitrous oxide emission. In this study, we also looked at nitrous oxide concentrations in the soil. We measured using permanently installed side port needles at different depths. And we measured these profiles 10 times over the winter and spring. And actually only in the spring and May, after the field operations, did we see significant increases in nitrous oxide. And I guess you can see here, if you look at the moldboard plowing, that certainly there seems to be a different vertical distribution of nitrous oxide in the soil, indicating that the residue distribution can be important. We try to estimate emissions of nitrous oxide based on the concentration gradient between 5 and 10 centimeters soil depth, and to compare this with the actual fluxes that we measured using chambers. And these are the results of these two estimations of fluxes. And I calculated the ratio, you can see it here to the right, the ratio between nitrous oxide emissions based on the chamber measurements and based on the concentration gradient. And clearly there is a dramatic difference in some cases between these two estimates. We take this as evidence that a lot of the nitrous oxide that is emitted to the atmosphere is actually produced close to the surface. And it makes sense that the biggest difference between these two estimates are with the shallow incorporation of crop residues. There you would expect that nitrous oxide, if it is from the residues, that this is produced near the surface. So to summarize from these two experiments, we found that the organic inputs in crop residues was an important driver of, or maybe source of nitrous oxide, and we found that the deep incorporation of the crop residues stimulated nitrous oxide emission compared to a more shallow distribution. So in this next example, I would like to look at the organic crop rotation system. And the results I'm going to talk about are derived from four different rotations. O2, that's a fodder crop rotation. It includes grass clover, that is green manure in this system, and also a cover crop after winter wheat. Then we have O4, that's a cash crop rotation, either with or without cover crops. And the last one is C4, that's a conventional system, but it's identical to O4, except that we use fertilizer, mineral fertilizer and pesticides in this. In the first example, we looked at green manure management in this O2 rotation. And we had two different strategies of managing the green manure. In one case, it was cut and left in the field to decompose, and then the residues were incorporated the following spring. In the other case, the cuts were removed and they were digested in an anaerobic digester, producing a manure that we could use in the other crops, for the other crops in the rotation. So here are nitrous oxide measurements during a 15-month period, including two spring periods. I have to apologize for the quality of the figure, but I hope you can see that there were very little difference in nitrous oxide emission between the minus M and the plus M treatments. So, in fact, the digested manure that we added here had very limited effect on nitrous oxide emission. We did see phases with high emissions of nitrous oxide, but that was, in fact, associated with crop residue incorporation. So, in one case here, it was the cover crop following winter wheat that was incorporated. Down here, it was the grass clover that was plowed under. And as you can see, the following year, we saw elevated emissions of nitrous oxide again in other fields, but at the same stage in the rotation. So it's quite strong evidence, I guess, that the crop residues were driving nitrous oxide emission in this system. We did a regression analysis looking at mineral nitrogen in the soil and soil moisture, and there was a strong positive interaction between soil nitrate and soil moisture, which indicated that denitrification is the main source of nitrous oxide in this system here. Looking at the nitrogen inputs in residues and in manure and comparing this to the nitrous oxide emission, we found that there were actually very similar emissions of nitrous oxide, around 0.6% in both systems. The difference is that in the system where we removed and digested the green manure, we had higher crop yields of the cash crops. So basically we could increase crop yields without increasing nitrous oxide emission, and that resulted then in significant reduction in nitrous oxide emission per crop yield with this practice where we digested the green manure. So again, to briefly summarize, the anaerobic digestion of grass clover produced a mobile source of nitrogen that could be used for increasing crop production elsewhere without an added increase in nitrous oxide emission, so partly uncoupling the food production from nitrous oxide emission. The final example that I'll try and draw on relates to the fact that Not all emissions are driven by the inputs that we add to the field in terms of fertilizers or residues or manure. We all know that there are also flushes of nitrous oxide associated with rainfall or with freezing and thawing events. In this case, we don't maybe know so much about whether it's the carbon that's driving this or maybe other aspects of the soil properties. And the crop rotation could influence those properties. So we wanted to look at effects of such a simulated freezing and thawing event using intact samples from these four different rotations. We went and sampled in early spring in winter wheat because that's the time in the rotation where there had been quite limited disturbances for a long time, no physical disturbances since the last autumn and no inputs of nitrogen since the previous year. In these four systems, we have determined the soil organic carbon content. And as I told you before, this was at the Flagebjerg site, so the soil organic matter content was quite low when we started this field experiment. As you can see, that the C4 system, the conventional system, did not pick up on. It was actually still low, and it is low now in organic carbon compared to the three organic rotations. We also did some soil physical measurements, or a colleague, Pierre Schöning, did these measurements, looking at soil structure and how this influences air permeability and airfield porosity. Soil was adjusted to three different soil water potentials, and it's clear that with each of these potentials that the C4 system has less air permeability, less airfield pore space compared to the organic system, so also indicating a poorer soil structure in this system. This is just to show how we collected our samples. We went to the field plots, took three random, selected three mini plots where we collected samples for the experiment in the laboratory. We then adjusted the soil moisture to three different water potentials, but we did it in a way so that we could add 2 milliliters of a nitrate solution to make sure that nitrate was not limiting in this case, because we wanted to look at the effect of soil carbon and the effect of other properties of the soil. So no nitrate limitation. And then when we added the solution, we ended up with minus 100 or minus 30 or minus 10 hectopascal of matrix potential. So these are the nitrous oxide emission. I should say that we took these samples and exposed them to freezing overnight at minus 10 degrees Celsius, and then we incubated them for 72 hours. And these are the average nitrous oxide emission for this 72-hour period. And what you can see here is that the emission of nitrous oxide was consistently higher for the C4 rotation, even though it had less carbon than the organic systems. We tried to calculate the relative gas diffusivity in the different samples using a model presented by Møldrup et al. For intact soil cores. Again, we found that the diffusivity in the C4 rotation was less than in the other systems, again, indicating that the soil structure was not so good and that the oxygen supply could be a limiting factor, maybe the factor that is driving nitrous oxide emission here. So even within a 10-year period, we did see significant differences between these crop rotations with respect to soil properties. And we found that oxygen supply appeared to be a limiting factor that can drive nitrous oxide emission, for example, after freezing and thawing events, or is implicated in nitrous oxide emission. But the fact that oxygen supply is limiting is not new. I guess most of you have seen this figure indicating the distribution of nitrous oxide and dinitrogen as a function of water-filled pore space. It was presented, I guess, by Eric Davidson already a couple of decades ago. But as I have shown in these examples, Peter Grace also emphasized this, the carbon is also an important driver of nitrous oxide because it induces an oxygen demand in the soil. So the quantity and the quality of organic matter and also the contact between organic matter and the soil will also be important for the actual fate of nitrogen. And then, of course, so the oxygen supply is influenced by texture, by structure, by the wetness of the soil. But I propose that maybe it could be useful when evaluating the potential for emissions and also the effect of management changes, that we look not only at the supply side, but also look at the balance between oxygen demand and oxygen supply. It's obvious that if we make a management change, for example, by introducing cover crops in the rotation, that the effect on nitrous oxide will depend on site conditions. So if you have a well-aerated soil, this might introduce an increase in nitrous oxide emission by increasing the oxygen demand. But maybe if you have a compacted or wet soil, you could have a different effect of this. And also accordingly, if you introduce mitigation measures, for example, conversion to no-till, this could have a beneficial effect on nitrous oxide emission in the case of this well-drained soil, as I tried to show in the examples from our sites. But it could also have a different effect if you have different soil conditions. So I guess I find it important that site-specific conditions are taken into account when we try and understand the effect of management and management changes on nitrous oxide emission. And maybe the categories defined by Philippe Rochette was a good place to start. I think it could be interesting to look more at residue management and fertilization in those experiments that he had used in his study. So finally, some conclusions. We found that in our well-aerated cropland soils, that nitrous oxide appeared to be mainly driven by the inputs of organic matter in manure and in crop residues. And in these soils, we did find that no-till appeared to be a nitrous oxide mitigation option. We also found that anaerobic digestion of green manure crops could be a strategy to increase crop yields without increasing nitrous oxide emission. And with respect to crop rotation, it does introduce long-term effects, differences in soil properties that may also be implicated in nitrous oxide emission, perhaps especially those that occur outside the main growing season and outside the short-term periods where inputs of crop residues or manure fertilizers dominate the picture. And my final point here was that estimates of nitrous oxide emission and management effects could maybe be improved by taking effects of taking oxygen demand and oxygen supply for the individual site into account when we try and understand what happens to carbon and nitrogen turnover. Okay, finally, I just want to stress that a lot of people have been involved in this work, hard-working PhD students, also a dedicated field staff at these two sites, and also colleagues here, Jørgen Olesen, Lars Munkholm, and Pierre Schöning and Eli Møller-Hansen have contributed to the studies here. Okay, but thank you. Sorry, could you repeat?
All of it.
Could you repeat
Sorry,
it?
Sorry, I'm not Frank Sinatra, so my voice. How do you discriminate denitrification from nitrification in your analysis with nitrogen, water, porosity? And what was the cover crop that I missed there?
Okay, the cover crop was fodder radish. So it has a relatively low carbon-nitrogen ratio, so it also probably produces some net nitrogen mineralization. We did this regression analysis and identified effects of ammonium, mineral nitrogen, soil moisture, and how this was related to nitrous oxide emission. And in this model, we found that there was a positive, significant positive interaction between soil moisture, water-filled pore space, and soil nitrate concentrations. And this is why we indicate that because nitrates seem to be positively correlated with nitrous oxide emission, that this is why we think denitrification is the main source.
Can it be, and I'm asking, I'm not really, but can it be that you're just measuring, the ammonium, that doesn't stay for long, and it turns into nitrogen?
Yeah, okay. We don't have any definite proof of this, of course, but you could also see that we had the peaks of nitrous oxide in this rotation system that were correlated with the crop residue incorporation and not so much with the application of manure. The digested manure contains a lot of mineral nitrogen, and this did not really induce any extra nitrous oxide. So one way or the other, maybe it's nitrified denitrification, but then the carbon is keeping oxygen low, and that induces denitrification. Yeah. Well, actually, no, I cannot move back here, apparently. But we did see some small trends of elevated nitrous oxide in January and in February in the tillage experiment with the cover crop that would indicate that maybe there is a release of carbon during freezing with the cover crop in the field. But it was not statistically significant, but there was a tendency, 10% or something level.
In your laboratory experiment, you said you froze your samples at minus 10 degrees centigrade overnight, and then you incubated them at what temperature for how long?
It was at 15 degrees, I believe, and for 72 hours.
50 degrees at 72 hours.
15 degrees, I guess.
50.
Yeah. I acknowledge this an extreme treatment, but we wanted to investigate effects of these different crop rotations here.
So no impact of added digestive green waste from N2 emission, why is that? Because no carbon left.
Well, we have investigated, we have compared untreated and digested slurry on this soil type before, and we also saw emissions of nitrous oxide. I think maybe soil conditions were quite dry in April this year, and so maybe we did not develop the low oxygen conditions that are driving the nitrous oxide production denitrification. I think that's normally we would see an effect also of digested slurry on nitrous oxide. Well, as I said, we were not, maybe I forgot to say, we were not able to produce anaerobic digestion on the grass clover because we didn't have enough material available to run the digester in a continuous mode. So what we had to do was we used digested pig slurry instead and adding the equivalent amount of nitrogen that we removed in the grass clover. So that's how we did it.
Thank you.